welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levernier. Drama coming up in this hour. Later on, we'll hear the Strange Wills program, but right now it's the Theater of Romance with Henry Fonda. With radio actresses Kathy Lewis and Verna Felton, this drama called Casanova Brown from November 13th, 1945 on CBS.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. From Hollywood, Colgate tooth powder for a breath that's sweet and Halo shampoo to glorify your hair bring you Casanova Brown, starring Henry Fonda. Colgate tooth powder for a breath that's sweet and Halo shampoo to glorify your hair present your theater of romance from Hollywood. Tonight, the curtain rises on your theater of romance and its production of International Pictures' hilarious comedy romance, Casanova Brown. Here is your play and your star, Henry Fonda. Once upon a time, in a small town just outside of Chicago, lived a very shy young professor, the last living descendant of one of history's most dashing lovers, and whose name, therefore, was Casanova. Casanova Brown. Since he was a quiet, conscientious, very good young man, people had long since forgotten the Casanova and simply called him Cas, or Professor, or Hey, you. That was something of an error, as you presently shall see. At this moment, Cas is preparing, somewhat nervously, to officially request the hand of his chosen lady.
All right, darling, let's go in. Don't look so frightened. You know Dad's bark is always worse than his bite. He really loves me very much.
I do not.
Oh, listening again, eh? May we come in, Dad?
No.
Cas wants to talk to you, Dad.
Well, that's different.
Hello, J.J.
Come on in. Not you, Madge.
Go ahead, Cas, darling. I'll wait downstairs.
What a revolting female she is. Sit down, Cas. Now, what can I do for you?
Well,
I've missed our little talks. Ever since you came back from New York, you've sort of avoided me.
Well, not really. You see,
I've not been entirely blind to the little crap Madge has set for you. But I know you're much too intelligent, much too shrewd to be taken in by that dreary female.
Perhaps I'd better make my position clear, J.J., before you say anything else. I want to marry her.
Marry whom?
Marry Madge, of course.
Madge? Are you out of your mind?
I am not.
But whatever on earth for?
Because I love her, of course.
Love Madge? Oh, come now, Cas. That's just downright silly. You must have some better reason than that. Besides, you don't know what love is. You've had no experience.
I have had experience, and I do know what love is, and I want to marry Madge.
You're insane. Absolutely insane. Get out of it while you still can. Get on a train. Get on a plane. Get on anything. And get out of here.
Now, see here, J.J. I'm going to marry Madge, and not you or anyone else is going to stop me.
You'll regret it. Mark my words, you'll regret it. Hello, Cas. Ready yet?
Hi, Pop. I will be in a minute.
Never mind a pop routine. You aren't my son-in-law until after the ceremony tomorrow. And then may heaven help you. You know, you've still got time to get out of this booby trap. By 1 o'clock tomorrow, you could be across the border, into Canada.
It's no use, J.J. I'm not going to be demoralized by a cold-blooded old sinner like you.
Oh, well, I suppose under a democracy, every individual enjoys the right and privilege of being as much of an imbecile as he pleases. By the way, I picked up your mail downstairs for you.
Thanks. Just throw it on the table. We've got to get over to that wedding rehearsal.
Say, what are you doing canoodling around with the maternity hospital?
Don't be silly. Who's canoodling around with a... What?
Well, that's the return address in this letter. Ellen Harris, Maternity Hospital, Chicago, Illinois.
Oh. Well, it's probably just an ad. Toss me that blue tie, will you?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Ad? Well, they got a nerve soliciting a man's business before he's even married. Sounds unethical to me. Shall I open it?
Go ahead.
Dear Mr. Brown, Well, this is a rather sinister method of solicitation. Dear Mr. Brown, a matter of personal importance and one which I would rather not be obliged to take up in correspondence unless you prefer. I was involved in a little blackmail accident at one time. The letter sounded exactly like this.
Well, finish it, will you?
I suggest that at your earliest convenience, certainly not later than the end of the week, you call at the hospital and consult with me. Cordially yours, Martha Zernicky, M.D.
Let me see that.
Have you been in or around Chicago recently?
No, not Chicago. There must be some mistake.
Well, if that letter's a mistake, we are in a very pretty position to knock up a little quick dough. They can't run around scaring young bridegrooms with letters like that.
It may not be a mistake.
What? What did you say?
You see, I don't know. I can't find out. I tried to call her on the phone long distance, but the number's been temporarily disconnected.
Call whom?
Oh, gosh. I don't know what to do. I'm in a very strange situation.
Yes, I should judge so.
But why Chicago?
I don't know why.
If it had been New York.
Yeah, New York. Yes.
But Chicago.
Would you mind telling me what this is all about?
Oh, that's going to be a little difficult. You remember last spring when I went to New York to see about selling my book?
Yeah.
Well, while I was there, I met a girl.
Ah, now we're getting somewhere. What was she like?
Oh, she was like no other girl you've ever seen in your life. I liked the way she walked. I liked the way she looked. I liked the way she looked at me. So we got married.
You what?
We got married.
What makes you think that bigamy is an attractive state of affairs?
Oh, we aren't married now. Her family had the marriage annulled. She was underage. Her family and I didn't hit it off, and she sided with her family. The reason I never said anything was because, well, it all happened so fast I never even had a chance to break the engagement with Madge.
Oh, people like you should never be allowed in New York unprotected. What are you going to do about it?
Well, I guess I better go to Chicago and see what this is all about. If I fly, I can be back in plenty of time for the wedding tomorrow. It may be some sort of mix-up. The letter doesn't say anything about Isabel or a baby.
Okay, go ahead, Papa. You may be lucky enough to get out of this marriage in spite of yourself.
I don't want to get out of it.
Foolish boy. Foolish boy.
Now, see here, I didn't come up here to answer a lot of questions or go through all these ridiculous physical examinations. I came to see Dr. Zernicky.
You will in due time. You cannot expect to change hospital procedure, you know, Mr. Brown. Any tuberculosis in your family?
Of course not. I come in here for a talk with Dr. Zernicky, and I'm stripped, weighed, fluoroscoped.
Any member of your family subject to fits?
Don't be insulting.
Insanity?
No, not yet.
That's all. You can put your coat on now.
Oh, when do I see Dr. Zernicky?
Right now, Mr. Brown. The record complete, Miss Carr?
Yes. He's in excellent physical condition.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Would you mind telling me just what concern my physical condition is to you?
Why, we naturally want it as a matter of record. You may file the report, Miss Carr.
Yes, Dr. Zernicky.
When is the wedding, Mr. Brown?
Tomorrow. How did you know about that?
We make it our business to know those things. That's the reason we were in such a hurry to get a record of your health. The usual procedure.
Is it?
Why, yes, Mr. Brown. Don't you think it's a good idea?
Oh, so that's what your letter was about. Well, it seems a little premature, but I'm sure it's very efficient. I didn't know what to think when I got your letter. Well, goodbye, Doctor. If there's ever any blessed events in our family, we'll get in touch with
just
you.
Just a moment. Don't you want to see your baby?
My baby?
Oh, you must. She's such a little love. You just come along with me. Just look through the glass. There she is, the one on the end.
Well, I'll be doggone. Say, could I go in and hold her for a minute?
Oh, I'm afraid not. No one is allowed in there but the doctors.
Oh, I suppose not. Well, well. This certainly is a surprise. How does she compare with others of her age and weight?
Oh, perfectly normal.
Just normal?
Well, maybe a little better.
Is she has all her arms and legs and fingers and toes and all that. Nothing missing, I mean.
A full set. The customary number and variety.
Oh, isn't it wonderful?
Oh, it's quite usual. Wouldn't you like to see her mother?
Her mother? Is she here?
Well, naturally. Yes. That is a lovely child. It's going to be a very lucky family that gets her for adoption.
Get her for what?
Adoption. Didn't you know? Miss Drury has registered the child for adoption. That's why we needed your medical record.
Well, she can just unregister her. You're not going to peddle my daughter around to some lazy idiot who hasn't any family of his own.
Miss Drury's title, her title to the child, is clear and legal. We've already checked into it.
Well, we'll just see about that.
I'll take you to Miss Drury's room. Perhaps it would be better if you two discussed it together.
Hello, Isabel.
Hello, Cass.
Gee, you look good.
Thank you. You look pretty good yourself.
How do you feel?
Oh, I'm feeling fine.
Well, then what's the idea of giving my baby away?
Your baby?
Isn't it?
Well, technically, yes.
Oh, then what's the idea of giving my technical baby away?
You seem to forget, Kaz, that I'm under no obligation to account to you at all. What I choose to do with my baby is my own affair, not yours.
Well, that's a fine attitude.
Well, suppose I had a chance for a marriage that meant a lifetime of complete and wonderful happiness. I certainly couldn't risk that happiness by presenting the man with someone else's child.
Good grief, are you planning on getting married again?
I only said suppose.
That's ridiculous. You can't marry anybody.
Why can't I?
Because you're a mother.
Well, that's not stopping you.
I'm not a mother.
Well, you're a father.
Oh, you can't do it, that's all. You can't throw that baby away and marry some creep you've dug up. And while we're on the subject, why didn't you write to me? You know I loved you. You knew there was no one else in the whole world for me. No matter how nutty your mother and father were.
I did not know. You never wrote to me. I waited and waited. I waited until it seemed foolish to wait any longer. As far as I could see, you'd just forgotten. And keep my mother and father out of this.
I never forgot. You were never out of my thoughts for one single day. I've tried to drive you out again and again, but I couldn't.
Please, Cass, you're in love with someone else.
Me? Who?
Well, you are engaged to be married.
That's right. Holy smoke, I almost forgot. I got to get out of here. Now, see here, Isabel. I'll have to come back later and argue with you, but don't you dare give my technical baby away.
I'm sorry, Cass, but I'm going ahead with my plans, just as I've made them.
That's your final word?
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, we'll just see about that.
Dr. Zernike!
Calm yourself, Miss Clark. What on earth is wrong with you?
I went to get the Drury baby for a feeding, and she was gone. The attendant said a tall man who said his name was Dr. Brown took it away.
We have no Dr. Brown.
But it must have been the baby's father. He must have stolen the doctor's coat and mask somewhere.
Have the building searched at once. If you don't find him, call the police.
Hello? This is J.J. Parrish speaking.
J.J., listen. I find myself in an extremely awkward predicament.
Before the second act curtain of Casanova Brown, starring Henry Fonda, a word for Colgate tooth powder. The young married Conlins are going to give a party. Betty and Jim Conlin are making up the guest list.
Well, say, Betty, you haven't put down Marie's name. How could you forget my sister?
I didn't forget her, Jim, but, well, a little breath of trouble is tagging Marie.
Well, gosh, why don't you tell her?
No, Betty can't very well tell her sister-in-law that she has a breath of trouble. I mean unpleasing breath. It's clearly a case for Colgate tooth powder. You see, anyone can be the victim of unpleasing breath. It happens to thousands without their knowing. Marks them down socially, brings them unhappiness, and they seldom suspect a real reason. Don't let that breath of trouble catch up with you. Do this. Brush your teeth night and morning and before every date with Colgate tooth powder. For Colgate tooth powder cleans your breath as it cleans your teeth. Scientific tests prove that Colgate tooth powder, in 7 cases out of 10, instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. And when it comes to cleansing, money can't buy a dentifrice that will clean your teeth better or quicker than Colgate tooth powder. Remember the name, Colgate tooth powder, with the accent on powder. And now, Colgate tooth powder and Halo shampoo bring you the second act of Casanova Brown, starring Henry Fonda. We find Kaz in a room at the Windsor Hotel, bending anxiously over his offspring. One of the hotel chambermaids is changing the baby as Frank the bellhop comes in the door.
How is she?
She's fine, Frank, except she's gained an ounce since her 10 o'clock feeding.
Holy smoke!
There you are, honey. I tell you, Mr. Brown, you ought to get her formula from the hospital. I never heard of such growth. She's gained a pound this week.
Yeah. I guess instead of weighing her 5 times a day, I better check her weight every hour today. If this keeps up, I'll have to do something. Why, if she gains a pound a week, that's 52 pounds a year. At that rate, she'll be about 12 feet high and 4 feet square.
Have you tried all the formulas in the book?
I'm on the 12th now. Monica, I think today we'll combine several. We'll take a base of Pablum Wablum and lace it with milk and vitro.
Baby's formula.
Frank, how'd you get it?
I asked for it. The minute they heard your name, they gave it out to me.
You didn't tell them where I was.
I didn't tell them. What do you take me for, a chump? I just walked in and I said...
You walked in?
In that uniform?
Sure.
With Windsor Hotel written on your sleeve?
Holy jumping Jupiter, I never thought of that. Gee, Mr. Brown,
keep still and let me think a minute.
You think they'll come for her?
Sure they'll come for her.
But how can they, if you're the father?
Being a father's not enough. You've got to be a mother, too. A man's not capable of taking care of a child, not according to the courts. He can build bridges, he can fly around the world, he can be president and run the whole United States. But taking care of a child is too much for him. For that, you've got to be a woman, any woman.
You mean if you married again, you could keep her?
That's right. That's right. Monica, I find myself in an extremely awkward position.
Yes, sir.
Are you married?
All right, I'm coming.
My name's Paris.
I'm Madge Ferris. I'm looking for Casanova Brown.
I'm sorry, and I want
Quiet.
My baby.
Quiet.
I think.
Quiet!
If you'll excuse me, I'm a little confused. I'm Frank, the bellhop.
Well, perhaps you'll all be kind enough to let me explain. I'm J.J. Ferris, an old friend of Mr. Brown.
Mm-hmm.
This is my daughter, Madge, whom he was to marry. And this is Isabel, who is the mother of his child. We all met at the hospital. Now, would you be good enough to tell me where Mr. Brown is?
He's getting married.
Married?
What?
Really? Who made bingo this time?
A Miss Monica Case of Cicero, I believe. It was one of those whirlwind romances.
Oh, Cass.
Oh, Dad.
Oh, nuts.
Mr. Brown, it's me, Frank. We got you moved into this room just in time. The whole mob's in there now, waiting for you.
Where'd you say I was?
Down at City Hall, getting married.
Good. We're going down to get the license as soon as they clear out. You let us know, and then you can come over and watch the baby while we go.
But where's Monica?
She's downstairs getting dressed. Did anyone see you come in here?
I did.
Isabel. Oh, Frank.
Oh, you spied on me.
I'm sorry. It's a bad habit. I'll try to do something about it.
Well, I'd better get back and keep an eye on the other ones.
Keep them over there, will you?
Yeah, I'll try.
Where's the baby, Cass?
On the bed.
Oh, Cass. Look how she's grown.
Too much, you think?
Oh, no. No, she's just perfect.
Don't touch her while she's feeding. It makes her nervous. She's very high-strung.
Not too high-strung, is she?
No. Just sensitive.
Oh. She hasn't been sick at all.
Oh, of course not. She's had the very best of care. I've tried to keep abreast of all the best authorities. I've read all the latest books on the subject of child care. which you might have done yourself if you had been interested in her.
Oh, Cass, you fool. You idiot. I never meant to give her away. I couldn't live without her.
Then why did you say you were going to?
Because I wanted you to come running and stop it. I wanted you to see her and want her and want me again. I just came to Chicago to have her because I thought that'd be the easiest place for you to get to.
You did?
Uh-huh. Of course, now it's too late for anything.
Too late? Why is it too late?
The bellboy told us what you've done, and Kaz, I do sincerely hope that you'll both be very happy.
Who's both? What are you talking about?
Didn't you get married this afternoon?
Of course not. Are you crazy? It takes 3 days to get married in Chicago.
You mean you're not married at all? To anybody?
No, I'm not married to anybody. Are you?
No, I'm not, Cass.
Well, would you marry me?
Cass, I'd love to marry you.
Oh, Isabel, I do love you so doggone much.
Say, if it's not too much to ask, would you mind telling me just what you're up to, Casanova?
Oh, hello, J.J. Say, I wonder if you'd help me out. I understand Madge is waiting across the hall, and Monica's waiting downstairs, and Isabel and I will...
Yeah, it's perfectly obvious about Isabel and you. Cass, I think that once more you find yourself in an extremely awkward position.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
All right. I'll explain to the ladies. Only, do me a favor, will you? I'm an old man, and I can't take much more of this. Marry this one, will you?
He's going to, Mr. Farris.
You bet I am going to, J.J. And this time it's going to stick as long as we live. Come on, honey. We'll take the baby and go down to the license bureau and make this whole thing legal.
Henry Fonda, star of tonight's presentation of Casanova Brown, will return to our microphone in just a moment.
Halo, everybody, halo. Halo is the shampoo that glorifies your hair. So halo, everybody, halo.
Use Halo shampoo if you want naturally bright and beautiful hair. For soap shampoos, leave a film on your hair. But Halo contains no soap, therefore leaves no dulling soap film. The very first time you use Halo, you'll notice your hair glistens in all its natural brilliance. The deep, full, natural color and luster come sparkling through like sunshine through a clean window pane. And remember, even in the hardest water, Halo makes oceans of rich, fragrant lather. Halo quickly carries away loose dandruff, grease, and dirt. Needs no lemon or vinegar rinse, because Halo leaves no dulling soap film. Nothing to hide your hair's natural beauty. Say hello to Halo and goodbye to dulling soap film. Use Halo on your children's hair, too. Get Halo shampoo at any cosmetic counter. Remember, Halo glorifies your hair.
So Halo, everybody, Halo. Halo shampoo, Halo.
Colgate tooth powder for a breath that's sweet and Halo shampoo to glorify your hair. Join in thanking Henry Fonda for his performance as the star of International's Casanova Brown. Welcome home to Hollywood, Hank.
Thanks. It's great to be back. And it was fun to appear on the Colgate Halo Theater of Romance. Next week's appearance of Jimmy Stewart should provide a lot of entertainment for the steady patrons of Theater of Romance. I know I'll be listening, and I hope that someday soon I'll be back with you. Until then, good night and good listening.
Bulletin for the future. Next week, Charles Band's production of Theater Romance for Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo stars Jimmy Stewart in No Time for Comedy, to be followed by Robert Walker and Robert Taylor. Keep a date with Theater of Romance for all the weeks to come. You'll always hear your favorite stars. These presentations of Theater of Romance come to you because of your enthusiastic recognition of Colgate Tooth Powder for a breath that's sweet and Halo Shampoo to glorify your hair.
The Theater of Romance on Tuned to Yesterday from November 13, 1945 on CBS. That would mark Henry Fonda's fourth radio appearance following his service in the Second World War. Like many actors of that day, he had joined the Navy, albeit at the age of 37, and even won a Bronze Star for helping to sink a Japanese submarine. And within his rank in the Navy, he would end up delivering dispatches to one Admiral Nimitz, who he would end up playing on the silver screen twice in the 1960s and 70s. It's an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. And now on to Strange Wills, bringing forth true stories of, you guessed it, Strange Wills. This episode called Black Interlude, featuring Warren William, Lorreen Tuttle, and Howard Culver from December 19th, 1946.
Strange Wills. Stories of strange wills made by strange people, starring the distinguished Hollywood actor Warren William, and featuring Marvin Miller and Lorreen Tuttle with Howard Culver, and the original music of Del Castillo. I devise and bequeath to my heirs the seven deadly sins: despair, anger, jealousy, revenge, lust, envy, and hate. And here is Warren William.
These are the stories of strange wills gathered from probate courts the world over. Many of them written on deathbeds or under highly emotional circumstances clearly show that the writers of the wills use this last chance of self-expression to vindicate within their own hearts the flagrant sins of omission and remission made during their lifetimes. Names, places, and time have all been changed in order that no reflection may fall on any person or persons living or dead. From the dusty vaults of the probate court, we bring you documentary proof of the old adage that man is the strangest of all creatures. You'll presently see what I mean. Of all the sins that live within the human heart, none is so deadly, so lasting as hate. Unchecked, it bears the bitter fruit of mental and spiritual annihilation, nor does it always end with death. Its vibrations reach out of the grave like the tentacles of an octopus in a last effort to win the final victory of a bitter revenge. Why did Francis X. Blair hate his only son, Paul, with a hatred as intense and boundless as the elements? The reason is as old as Eve. Francis X. Blair, rich, handsome, and a widower, and his son, Paul, were both in love with the same girl. Francis X. Blair had been my client for nearly 10 years. He was dominant, relentless, and headstrong, the kind of a man who took what he wanted, no matter what the hurt. Paul was like his dead mother, shy and sensitive. His talents ran to the literary. How he ever managed to take the lovely and beautiful Phyllis Lamar away from his father, I'll never know. But insiders told me that it was just a case of love at first sight. Everyone who knew about it was anxiously waiting to hear whom her final choice would be, father or son. And then one cold November night, Francis X. Blair invited me over to his penthouse apartment to discuss his will. I knew that something extraordinary was about to happen.
Telling me to be a good loser, John, may be the conventional thing to say, but unfortunately, I've never lived in the conventional manner.
Oh, why can't you forget and forgive them both, Francis? After all, Phyllis has made her choice, and while she may prefer Paul as a husband, you can still have her as a daughter.
I'm sorry that I can't agree with you. I consider my son in the light of a thief, a love thief, if you like. But the fact remains that he deliberately took away from me the one thing in my life that I cherished most highly. I would have preferred it if he had robbed my safe. It would have been more honorable. He's got to pay for his sin, and she will pay for her folly.
Why don't you sleep over it for a few days, Francis? I'm sure that with sober reflection...
It won't be necessary. I have made my final decision. From this day on, my son is disinherited. I want you to redraft my will, cutting him off with $1.
But surely you aren't serious. Paul is just out of school a few years. He isn't equipped.
Let him starve, then, and the girl with him. She'll come crawling back to me on her knees one of these fine days, begging my forgiveness.
Francis, I beg you not to be hasty.
I'm sorry, but it's too late. I hate Paul Blair as I've never hated another soul, living or dead. I want him to suffer, just as he has made me suffer. I'll hate him until my dying breath. And if I can, I'll go on hating him from my grave. And this is the last time I will ever mention his name again, as long as I live.
Nor did the next 2 years bring a change of heart. Francis X. Blair grew more bitter day by day, if such a thing was possible. His will was prepared and executed according to his wishes. But I still hoped that before he died, he would relent and repent. Paul and Phyllis, meanwhile, were quietly married and were living in a small furnished apartment on the outskirts of town. On the night of their first wedding anniversary, they invited me to dinner. And I want to offer my congratulations on this, the first year of your happiness together.
And don't think we haven't been happy, Mr. O'Connell. Paul has been wonderful.
Well, I had to make up in some way for all the millions she lost by not marrying Dad.
Oh, I just been talking nonsense.
No, how is Dad, Mr. O'Connell? You know, I haven't seen or heard from him in almost 2 years. Tell me, has he softened any?
No, I'm afraid not, Paul. In fact, he's more bitter than ever. Of course, there's always a chance, always the possibility.
We don't want any chances, do we, Paul? We have our own plans now, our own dreams, too. I think good comes out of everything, Mr. O'Connell. If Paul hadn't been disinherited, do you think he would ever have taken a job as a reporter? That's where he learned to write.
And I agree with you, Phyllis. I think Paul has a brilliant future as a writer. One day, with you behind him...
Oh, everything would be fine if Dad would only forgive me. I know it sounds foolish to you, Mr. O'Connell, but his continual hatred for me is preying on my mind. You see, I've never hated, and the thought of someone hating me, well...
Now, I'm sure you feel badly about it, Paul. But you see, you've wounded your father's ego. That's a dangerous thing to do to anybody.
I've told Phyllis this before, and she laughed at me, but I want to tell you too, Mr. O'Connell. Sometimes I imagine I hear my father laughing at me. Laughing as though he expected something to happen to me, something...
Oh, please, Paul, get that thought out of your mind. Nothing that your father can say or do will change anything. Our lives are our own. We're the masters of our own destinies. Voodoo, witchcraft, and superstitions are obsolete. And when next you see Francis X. Blair, Mr. O'Connell, please ask him to stay out of Paul's dreams. He may not know it, but I'm getting a problem child on my hands.
But I never saw Francis X. Blair again, that is, alive. He died in his sleep just 2 days after my visit with Paul and Phyllis, and he had neither forgiven nor forgotten. I attended the funeral and sat with Paul and Phyllis. Paul looked disconsolate, discouraged that the hatred in his father's heart was being carried to his grave.
Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus, et Pater et Filius, et Spiritus Sanctus, requiescat in pace. Amen.
As the little funeral procession walked slowly out of the church, I wondered if this was to be the end of hate. Surely death would be the great healer. Had not the late Francis X. Blair done enough hurt to more than compensate for his lost love? I thought so. But early one evening, several months later... Yes?
Mr. O'Connell?
Yes.
Here at the airport with Paul. We're leaving, Mr. O'Connell, leaving for good. We're flying to the West Coast.
For good? Heavens, what's happened?
Paul is standing just outside the booth. I don't want him to hear me. Mr. O'Connell, Paul said that he couldn't live here another day. Since his father's death, he's grown worse instead of better. He says that he hears his father still laughing at him. He says if he doesn't go immediately, he's liable to lose his mind.
Phyllis, I want you to keep in touch with me. I'll help you, both of you, all that I can. Maybe it's best... Hello? Hello? Hello?
Number, please.
Oh, never mind, operator. So this was it. The hatred of father for son was really living on, coming up like some shrouded ghost from the tomb to encompass and destroy. I recall the old familiar proverb... Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. I wondered why they stopped with a woman. What about a man? What about the dead? Where did fury end, I wondered. A few months later, I received my first letter from Phyllis. The change had done Paul good. He'd turned to freelance writing and was concentrating on radio scripts. They were building their lives anew. Yes, it was a long way from the grave of Francis X. Blair to the West Coast. Long enough, I hoped. I felt happy about Paul and Phyllis for the first time in months. But one night, quite unexpectedly, I received a telegram. It was from Phyllis.
She told me the very thing that I'd been fearing. Paul had been committed. Committed to an institution for the insane. She begged me to come at once, and I saw there was no time to be lost. How to fight against a man dead these many months was a problem that offered no immediate solution. But there had to be an answer. Of that I was sure, and I meant to find it. I left that night by plane to enlist my services in the fight against hate and its vicious allies, the seven deadly sins.
Oh, Mr. O'Connell, I'm so glad you've come. I'm so glad. It's been a nightmare.
And I'm glad to be here, too, young lady. I intend to see this thing through, no matter how long it takes.
Oh, thank you so much.
Just take hold of yourself now until we have this thing licked. First, I want you to tell me everything that happened to Paul since the day you came. Then I hope I'll know what to do.
Well, as I told you in my letter, Paul went into radio. His training on the newspaper was excellent, and he turned out several very good scripts. One show in particular he calls Happy Valley was seriously considered by several agencies. Paul has written over 30 chapters. You see, it's a daily serial about a disabled war veteran who comes home. And the story he tells about his readjustment into a normal society.
What happened to it, Phyllis?
He had a meeting 2 weeks ago at the agency. As I understand it, several people were present. Directors, actors, and a man who was assigned Paul to a contract. A Mr. Henley, the agency's producer. He took Paul into his private office. Everything was going along nicely. They were about to come to an agreement.
I've gone over your script very carefully. You've got a fine show here, Mr. Blair. But the staff read it, and they all liked it.
Oh, thank you very much. Very much, Mr. Henley. You don't know how I appreciate all this.
Don't thank me. I'm a businessman. I'm not doing this out of sympathy. You've come up with something we like, and it's a deal. I'll have my secretary draw up the contracts. 5 shows a week, 52 weeks, with an option for renewal, and you'll receive $100 a show. That's the minimum scale, I know, but still a lot of money.
That sounds good to me, Mr. Henley. I'm ready to sign.
No, excuse me.
Surely.
Henley. What? Called off. Why does he have to get a sore throat when he's singing for us? Tell him I'll fly east today. Tell him to meet me at the airport. Yes, I'll leave here in about an hour. He can't do that to me. Hey, Blair, I can't sign your contract today. I've got to rush east. Come back next week. I'll have my secretary get in touch with you. See you later. I'm sorry, Mr. Blair, but it just can't be helped.
And so, Mr. O'Connell, that's how it ended. Paul didn't say anything when he came home. He retired early. And sometime during the night...
Oh, what's that? Oh, Phyllis. Phyllis. Do you hear? Do you hear it?
Paul, what is it? Oh, you're what?
It's my father. He's laughing. Laughing from his grave.
Oh, Paul, that's nonsense. I don't hear anything.
He's here. Laughing at us, Phyllis. He's responsible for everything going wrong with me.
Paul, please.
I never should have married. I never should have married.
Paul, stop. Stop. You don't know what you're saying.
Oh, yes, I do. I know I'm through with everything.
Oh,
I can't
no.
stop my father from hating or from destroying me. It's no use, Phyllis. It's no use. I'm through. I'm through. I tell you, I'm through.
I motored out to the mental institution where Paul had been taken. The late Francis X. Blair had a fight on his hands, whether he knew it or not.
For a while, Mr. O'Connell, we thought he was going to recover rapidly, but then he got worse. We've been giving him shock treatments, therapy, the usual correctives for his type of illness, but unfortunately...
We appreciate everything that's been done for him, Doctor. But I do have some rather interesting facts, which I hope may be of benefit in treating him. You see, Doctor, I represented his father legally. For the next hour, I told the doctor what I knew about the strange case of Paul Blair. I told him of a plan I had that might possibly help to restore the young man's reason. It was a gamble, I knew, but it was time to put our cards on the table. It was now or never. After hearing me out, the doctor agreed to my plan. We left without seeing Paul, but in a happier frame of mind. Later that afternoon, I called upon a friend of mine, a radio broadcasting executive. I told him the story.
What you're asking me to do may cost my job, John, but it's worth the chance. Let's see. I've got a spot tomorrow afternoon, 3 o'clock. We're changing programs. I'll sandwich your show in. But only for one day, mind you.
Believe me, Joe, I appreciate that one day.
But if my switchboard is clogged with an angry mob calling for my neck, you know what you'd better do, don't you?
Yes, I do. I'll start running. At 3:15 the next day, everything was in readiness for the experiment. A radio had been slipped into Paul's room. Phyllis, the doctor, and I stood outside his partly open door, waiting for the moment that was to lift him from his black interlude or to plunge him forever into the half-world of fantasy. Dejectedly, Paul sat in his chair, gazing off into nowhere. He looked forlorn, despondent. Our plan was a shot in the dark, but we were all praying for it to hit the mark. And then, 3:00...
the floor excitedly. Would our desperate gamble work out? It had to.
Welcome home, Sergeant Watson. We're all mighty happy to have you back, and we're proud of what you've done down to the last man of us. I haven't got the key to the town to offer you. You won't need it. Every home here in Happy Valley is your home, son. Yes, all yours. From now on in.
Thanks a lot. You don't know what this means to me, after being gone 5 years, and 2 of it spent in a hospital. I can't see you, but I feel you, and it's the best feeling I've had in a long, long time.
Doctor, Mr. O'Connor, look, Paul. He's fallen, maybe he's...
Turn off the radio, please.
Go on.
Here, Mr. O'Connell, give me a hand. We'll carry him over to the bed. Careful.
Move that pillow, Phyllis.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
There we are. Just leave him here, please. I'll ring for the nurse and we'll attend to him immediately.
Well, Doctor, maybe we shouldn't have done this.
Well, there's nothing to worry about for the moment, but I'll have to ask both of you to leave now. I'm sorry, Mr. O'Connell, that the experiment didn't work.
I'm sorry, too, Doctor. Probably I let my hopes get the better of me.
I'll let you know later whether or not this afternoon's experiment had any violent reaction. I'm afraid,
yes,
though...
Yes, Doctor. I'm afraid that I made a jumble of the whole business. Thank you again. I'll call you later. Our return trip was a bitter one. We'd taken a chance and lost. Instead of shocking Paul out of his mental depression, my idea had caused a complete collapse. As we walked slowly into the Blair apartment...
Excuse me, Mr. O'Connell. Yes?
Is Mr. O'Connell there? This is Joe Parnell at the radio station.
I've been trying to locate him for an hour.
For you, Mr. O'Connell.
Thank you, Phyllis. Hello?
John, where in the world have you been? I've called you everywhere.
I just this moment came back from the hospital.
Well, the switchboard's been swamped, all right, just as I was afraid of. Oh, listen to this. Happy Valley is a smash hit. Hundreds of people have called and wired their congratulations.
Well, I'm happy to hear it, Joe. Only...
For heaven's sakes, only what?
Only that the idea backfired, Joe. Paul Blair hurt his show at the hospital and collapsed before it was half over. The shock was too severe. We fear for the very worst. For three long, never-ending days, Paul Blair lay unconscious on his bed in the sanatorium. I felt chagrined, angry that I'd permitted myself to take such a desperate chance. I wondered through those long hours of Paul's black interlude whether or not the evil voice of his dead father was reaching him. Had Francis X. Blair achieved his bitter revenge even from the depths of his grave? Phyllis and I waited impatiently to learn the answer.
Yes?
Mrs. Blair, this is Dr. Fry.
Yes, Doctor, what is it? What is it?
Paul regained consciousness about an hour ago. I'm very happy to say he appears to be quite rational. He's asking for you.
Oh, thank you, Doctor, thank you. Oh, I'm so happy. Darling.
Oh, I heard it, Phyllis. I heard Happy Valley.
Yes.
Oh, it was wonderful. Imagine my show, my first show on the air.
Yes, Paul, I know. Mr. O'Connell and I were here when you heard it. Wasn't it wonderful?
And you'll be happy to know, Paul, that your show is a smash hit. Service organizations everywhere are behind it. It's on the air to stay.
Oh, I must get well, get strong in a hurry. Every day is precious to me now. I have new ideas, new shows. And I have you, Phyllis. I know now that our world's going to be new and beautiful.
Yes, dear.
And I know, too, that Dad finally forgave me. You see, after I heard the show, he stopped laughing. Maybe he heard it, too.
William will be back in just a moment to tell you what the official records say about the probate cause of the black interlude. But first, here is a word from our sponsor. Again is Warren Williams.
After a protracted hearing, the court decided that the testator, Francis X. Blair, was of unsound mind when he made his will, and his entire estate eventually went to his son, Paul. He, in turn, gave a large part of his inheritance to a disabled veterans clinic. Paul is now a very successful writer and author. Just recently, he and Phyllis left for an extended trip through South America to gather material for a new book he's preparing to write. And about the laugh from the grave, well, frankly, your guess is as good as mine. Did Paul actually hear it? Or was it caused from an oversensitiveness together with a persecution complex? Well, if it's true that love is eternal, why not hate? If the one is possible, why not the other? Yes, why not? Next week, I have a story for you about a last will and a testament that's stranger than any story you've ever read in a book. A pirate and a beautiful girl were shipwrecked on a lonely, deserted island. Unfortunately for him, he was mortally hurt in getting ashore. Because he was possessed of a considerable fortune, and because he felt that he must atone for his past sins, he decided to make a will. But he had no paper, no pencil or ink. And yet he made a written will that found its way back to civilization and the courts. And how did he do it? Well, when you hear the story... The Lady and the Pirate, you'll understand more about it.
This is Warren William inviting you to listen again next week.
By Ken Cradine and directed by Albert Ulrich. This is a Teleways feature produced in Hollywood.
Strange Wills on Tuned to Yesterday from the 19th of December 1946, a syndicated broadcast. And that brings to a close this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for tuning in.